Welcome to Experience Health Radio, presented by Cingala Consulting. Cingala Consulting was founded on the basic principle that the patient should be at the center of every decision made by healthcare organizations. Our mission is to help these organizations realize their investments in technology, employees, clinicians, and most importantly, their patients. We bring together industry leaders on air each week to engage in conversations about the patient experience with a focus on the developments in areas that have the greatest opportunity for improvement in healthcare today. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'm AJ Malaragno, president and co-founder of Cingala Consulting, and today's host of Experience Health Radio. Today's topic is international access, specifically the Yankafa project. Anyone who knows us at Cingala knows that in our world, the patient comes first. We work with our clients all over the country to improve access and intake operations to make it easier for our patients and to access and receive their care. You can have the best doctors in the world, but that doesn't mean much if the patients can't get in to see those doctors. Now imagine how difficult that access must be for patients in countries with fewer resources than what we have here. The Yankafa project is working on access issues in Western Ghana by building medical clinics in remote areas and then supporting the clinics by training medical staff and supplying medication. The organization works with local medical professionals and regional and national leaders to improve access and help deliver quality care. Today, we are absolutely honored to have Dr. Gabriella Nancy, co-founder of the Yankafa Project. She's here today to talk about the great work that is happening in Ghana, how this model differs from other aid organizations, and what healthcare access means to her. Dr. Nancy received a BA in Global Arts and was working in arts administration when world events made her realize she really wanted to work in foreign aid. She went back to school to receive an MD from St. Matthew's University and an MA in healthcare administration from St. Joseph's College of Maine. After graduating, she started the Yankafa Project in 2010 and formed the nonprofit organization in 2011. So with that, welcome to the show, Gabriella. How are you today? Sorry, I had you on mute. How are you today, Dr. Nancy?
Oh, I'm fine, and thank you for having me on your show.
So this is obviously pretty new for our audience, talking about a lot of the access and intake and communication here in the States is pretty common in the last maybe year and a half, it's really ramped up. But when I was fortunate enough to meet you, it blew me away of what you're doing and really why you're doing it. So that obviously raised the interest of us at Cingala to learn more about it, and which is why I want to have you on the show today to share with our audience. Can we start with a little bit more about your background and how you got into this?
I got into working in Ghana through kind of a traditional route, I suppose. I attended a medical mission, which is usually when a bunch of foreign medical providers go to a country and provide care for a short amount of time. And Dr. Deborah Martin had been my preceptor in medical school, and she was going to Ghana. She'd been once before. And she asked if I wanted to go on this mission. So I did that, but I had a little bit different experience because I took a team of two other people. It was an EMT from the military and also a pharmacist. And we put on backpacks and we went out into the villages. And we were looking for people that were homebound and couldn't make it to clinic. And we found plenty of them. And it was so striking to me how well they were cared for by their loved ones. People were on the floor, on mats, or even stacked up blankets and towels, and in homes with no running water. And somehow they had managed to keep their loved ones free of bed sores. They'd kept them clean. And And it just made me think about the burden of disease and the burden of losing children and losing chronically ill people, taking care of them for such a long time. And some people, so many of them actually, were in these conditions because of untreated farm-related injuries that had, you know, settled into the joint with infection and different scenarios. So it was preventable, and that was even more heartbreaking. So
wow.
I decided to go back.
And what was, I mean, there's, I often hear, I have not yet been to Ghana, but due to meeting you, a plan on going over there shortly. With all of what you just described, how did you decide what to focus on? And, I mean, there's so much to offer and to bring there for help. What made you decide on access and interoperability?
It was kind of an evolutionary process for me because originally I thought, I'll go back and we'll figure out how to make medical missions more effective, where we can treat people for a longer period than we're actually there. So I thought, well, if we screen for certain diseases, typhoid and malaria are biggies over there, then we can predict people that aren't sick yet but will be, because people will come to clinic that aren't sick, you know, or maybe they have a headache, or maybe they had a headache a week ago but they might have it again, so, you know, could you give them some medicine in case, or, you know, just different scenarios. They will come just because it's their only opportunity to get help, so they may not see a doctor for another year or two, you know.
Sure.
Maybe more than that, actually. But anyway, so that was my first idea. And then I started working with local medical professionals and not bringing volunteers from the U.S. because I found that they were wonderful. They knew the tropical diseases and the setting better. They spoke all the different languages that were involved, even though English is the official language of Ghana. There's other languages there. And they were highly qualified. So I started thinking along those lines that there were perfectly qualified people here. And then I had one experience that was just so life-changing for me. We had a clinic in a village, and we had 300 people there, like always. It's just amazing, you know, people just come and they start walking when they hear there's going to be a clinic. But because we had started the system of screening people for malaria, especially in advance, there was a delay when clinic started because the lab techs would have to give them numbers and take their blood. So I had kind of a system where I would go out in the people that were waiting and try to find wounds, because wounds take so long to treat, and try to get them kind of out of the way, if you will. And sometimes the wounds are so awful you can smell them and actually locate them that way. It's just a terrible scenario.
Wow.
But anyway, so what I did find was a very, very sick baby. And she had complicated malaria. She had pneumonia. She was critically anemic. And I realized that she was really needing to go to the hospital. We were not going to be able to treat this baby there. And her mother was about 18, maybe. And there's something that happens in a cocoa shed with 300 people. With the heat and the sound, it's like harmonic start, and it comes in waves. And I've had people before just say, I got to go outside and get some air, you know. But this young mother actually had a panic attack. And I was trying to find a way to get her to the hospital, but I had no vehicle. We'd actually been dropped off. And the phone network was down. So it was so stressful, and the baby was getting worse and worse. And I told the mother, you know, you need to get some fresh air. And when I finally got a vehicle for her, the mother had panicked and taken the baby and gone home. And I know that baby died. And so when I went back to where I was staying, which was actually at the Catholic mission, I was just fuming. I thought, this is not how we treat fellow humans. This is a cattle call. I have cattle. I know what a cattle call is. And this situation overwhelmed her, but she should have been able to take that baby somewhere when it wasn't very sick, and it would have never been an issue. So I just
And what
kind
do you
of,
think you, the reason was that she was unable to do that? Was it the location? Was it communication? What was the reason she couldn't?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's definitely the location. We were just so remote that there wasn't anywhere to go. Yeah. So the probability that help would have been there on that day to save the baby was so slim. And I kind of marveled at that miracle when I first found the baby. And the other thing that also prevents them getting help is the cost. A trip to the hospital in a taxi may be a month's salary. People just don't have it.
Wow.
So there's a couple of issues there, but it's access.
Sure.
Effectively. So we started talking about actually building, and that's where it started. It was largely from that incident.
Okay. So so would you say the Yonkefa project is around building the clinics or operationalizing those clinics that are already exist, or a little bit of both? Where does the whole access, communication, how does that play into this?
Well, originally our idea was to focus solely on building clinics, but in the meantime, some other things have changed in Ghana. For one thing, when we started building clinics, the Ghana cedi, which is their currency, was about equal to a dollar. And I looked it up this morning, and it's 4.57 cedis to a U.S. dollar. So inflation is affecting them terribly. And there's, I'm sure, other factors that, you know, are playing a part here. But the bottom line is that supplies are not getting to the other clinics in our rural areas either, even the government clinics. So we realized that it didn't make sense to just build a clinic out there and be the only one with supplies. So we have also been shipping cargo containers of donated medical supplies and supplying the whole district and some of the other districts that need things. But we mainly focus on that one.
So shifting gears a little bit, I also know that you have a very special interest in when the patients would arrive, that it was very difficult to figure out who they were and what was their medical history, and how are we certain that we're giving them the right attention or medication. And you mentioned that to me that the movement of the electronic medical record or any kind of record system there is almost non-existent. And obviously they don't have social security numbers. There's very limited information on uniquely identifying them. So you and your team have come up with, from what I understand, a very unique solution for that around identifying their medical history. Can you talk a little bit about your version of the EMR over there?
Yes, we started using biometrics to complete medical records on patients in these village temporary clinics. And I really realized the need once when I had a patient come that I had seen 5 hours by drive away, and he came with a little slip that I'd handed him, and I realized that I'd seen him before, and I thought, how many people have I seen before? You know, I wouldn't even know unless I recognize, you know, who they are. Sure. But sometimes with those numbers, it's pretty hard. And there's some unique things about Ghana. Some are are probably not unique to rural settings, but for instance, nobody knows their birth date. And it's a little bit unique in Ghana because I just don't think it's culturally important. But what is important is what day of the week you were born. So people often name their children after the day of the week. And so if you hear a Ghanaian name, you can often know what they were born. Like Kofi Annan, the UN Secretary General, was born on Friday. And but anyway, so this creates a lot of redundancy, and a lot of aliases, just getting around. People have, you know, they have their Christian name, they may have a family name, they may have a nickname. And then literacy rates are not terribly good, and so there's a lot of spelling issues too. So it may not even be spelled the same way the next time they come. So really, biometrics just needed to be used to identify people, and it was so well received. There's nothing.
And how are you? Rewarding. How are you doing that? Is that with fingerprints, retina scanning? What method are you using?
We started out with palm vein, and that was just not working for pediatric patients because their little hands would just fall right into the cradle. So we moved to iris, and that's been just wonderful. We can even do the little tiny babies, just get them to open their eyes for a second. And so that's been wonderful. And people are just so excited when you scan their eyes and you say, "Hey, are you Kofi Arthur?" You know, and they get a big smile because they've been recognized. So it's been it was a real asset to the village setting, but then we decided to partner with the government of Canada. They had a Grand Challenges program, and also the university there, Noguchi Memorial Institute. And so we partnered with them to do a pilot of using it in actual clinics and hospitals. And so that worked out pretty good, but the problem is everybody wants it now, and we need to be able to have the clinics and the hospitals talk to each other and share information without internet. So we have
So that's a big bonfire. Let me stop there, because I want to make sure I point that out to our audience. So think of today's world where we can send an email and or secure message through one of the EMR systems and get almost an immediate feedback. That is not the case for where you are. And what you told me before, I likened it to back in the day when the Palm Pilot first came out, and you would go to a meeting, write stuff down, come back, and then dock it in the cradle in order to sync it. Is that similar situation in what you have over there right now?
It is. Except there's one more issue, which is that the updates coming one way have to go back the other way too. Does that make sense? So if a patient has presented at a small clinic somewhere and then has presented at the hospital, then you have to decide if that's both happened, you know, between updates, and you have to decide maybe he gave a different identifier this time. You know, you have to decide which information takes priority, and then the information from the hospital has to go back to all the clinics too. So it's two-way, but yes. So the only solution really is a thumb drive that can be carried around, and we can do periodic updates by internet, but it just can't be depended on, and it certainly can't be real time.
Wow. So tell us a little bit, talk a little bit about, so you've gone through one iteration of this EMR, and now you're underway with a newer, more robust, more scalable, because it sounds like what you started off in one village is now going to start to be scaled across the region and quite possibly even further. You mentioned you're working with a company, Bonfire, who the Sangola team knows very well. What are they doing, and what's the plan for you to scale this out, though?
They're actually rewriting it on the back end, I think, largely from scratch. But they are making it so that it can handle millions of patients instead of, 100,000 patients. And also that we can do these periodic updates.
So for those of you in our audience, this is, as you could imagine, not a very inexpensive endeavor. This is something that takes a ton of resources, a lot of knowledge of how this all works together. And not only how it all works together, but based on what we know here in the United States, it's a whole different game, as we just learned, in Ghana. So some of the assumptions that we make developing and creating processes, they're not applicable there. And the team from Bonfire is working with Dr. Nancy and her team, and actually traveling over to Ghana. And they're doing this all on their own time, which is absolutely amazing. Floored me when I heard this. But that's, the type of people that Dr. Nancy attracts and doing good for our fellow human beings. So I give you so much credit, both to you, Dr. Nancy, and to the Bonfire team for doing this. It's absolutely amazing.
Oh, we're just absolutely thrilled. So I can't wait until it's ready to deploy again.
So what lessons have you learned from your work in Ghana that some of our audience members here in the States can take back? Anything that immediately comes to mind that we take advantage or take for advantage here?
Well, one thing that I hear people say is that, their doctor is from Ghana. They'll tell me that, or their doctor's from some other West African country. So they think that means that there's an issue with everybody who's trained in Ghana wanting to leave, and they call that brain drain. But my take on it after spending so much time is that Ghana trains great healthcare professionals, and that's why we poach them. They're great here. But the reason why they leave is there's nowhere for them to serve frequently. So if you spend 4, 8, 12, 16 years to train to help people, then you end up in a mud hut with no electricity and no water. The nurses have to carry the water to work with them on their head every day to wash their hands. And you may have, we call it Mother Hubbard's cupboard. You may have a couple of IV bags and some iron tablets, and that's all you have. And then you have patients with malaria and typhoid and various bites and preeclampsia and infections and difficult deliveries, farm injuries, and you have nothing. And I can't blame a trained medical professional for leaving, because there's nothing more disheartening than knowing what to do and not having the supplies to do it. So I think the problem of brain drain could be solved by having facilities in which people can serve and help their own community.
So we've all heard of, Doctors Without Borders, and there's other organizations that send medical supplies over to that area. It seems to me that what you described today is really pulling all of that together, because all of those items individually, although very helpful and significant, without a system or a process to provide the care and know what care to give, it makes it very difficult. Is that accurately describing more or less what the difference is between those others and what you guys are doing?
I think Yonkify is just a different model to consider, and it doesn't mean that it's the only effective model, but other organizations like that have picked a single problem to solve or a single disease. There's, you know, organizations that have very successfully targeted one disease all over the world. But we picked a spot. We help in some other spots, but and some of our solutions have radiated from our spot. But we have a home base, and we have local volunteers that want to help their community. We work with the government, and we've partnered with them on these clinics. And the government's picked another site for us that if we go out there, it just looks like cow trails. You know, it's little pathways coming down from different farms. But the government workers know that that is a critical crossroads and that it would be the ideal place for a clinic. Of course, the road's horrible and we have to figure out how to get, you know, trucks into it. But they know where the critical need is. And and so working with the government is often helpful, too, instead of just deciding what somebody needs, ask them what they need.
Right. What would you say your biggest challenge is? Is it the funding to do this? Is it the government over there? It's making sure that you're not caught up in all the red tape. What's maybe there's none. Maybe it's moving smoothly. What would you say to that?
Everything I was told about Africa, or even warned about, has not really been the case. I was always told there would be so much corruption, we would be paying bribes everywhere, everything would get stolen. That has never happened. We've never paid a bribe. Whoa. We have a tool shed in the middle of the jungle that's full of tools, and every tool there is at least a month's salary, and nobody has ever stolen anything. Our cargo containers get through the port. We don't pay taxes. Nobody's ever tried to bribe us. There's a couple $1 million in each cargo container worth of items. So that has not been an issue.
That's great.
We don't have trouble usually getting gifts in kind of medical supplies. That seems to be there's a good network of that. We have trouble with building supplies. We have a lot of trouble when we buy stuff in Ghana because the quality that is being shipped over there from other countries is so poor that we bring it all the way from the port 12 hours away and it just breaks. So many people said, oh, you need to buy local and that kind of thing. But we also need to succeed. And succeeding has often meant shipping it. That's, in some ways, I think our biggest problem is buying the building, and that's where we have a fundraiser every September, and that's been helping the most towards actually buying the supplies to build with.
So if members of our audience want to get involved and be part of this, whether that's financially or some other means, how would they go about doing that?
Well, we have a website.
You have a website?
Yonkofa.org, Yonkofa.org. And, you know, there's different programs there that people can donate for. And we always welcome volunteers and any sort of knowledge. One thing I have noticed is that most of our advisors are physicians, and we're always lacking in the marketing department and that kind of know-how. So we always need that. Any contribution in that regard is very welcome.
Great. And
just
tell me a little bit more about that.
When
you say marketing department or marketing, in what ways can they contribute to that? Is that just the, like you said, the ideas? Is it the execution of that, bringing awareness?
I think both. It's ideas for how to bring awareness and ideas for how to fundraise, because, like I said, you have a bunch of doctors trying to muddle through something that's unique. And we can always use help there.
Absolutely.
And ideas. When you have the same people looking at the same problem for a while, then you need fresh ideas. And that's why I've been so delighted with Bonfire. Some of the ideas they have for other projects and other issues we face are so helpful. And just having extra eyes on the issues and extra solutions is wonderful.
It is refreshing. I think we've worked with that group for a while at Singola, and they're not your typical developers that just hide behind the computer and just code and do whatever you ask of them. They are very, I consider them thought leaders, and they are always challenging status quo and how to do things differently. So I think when I heard of your project and know them, it was a logical fit to introduce the two of you, because I think you both, get satisfaction and do great things for the world. So I commend you for doing this and for staying focused and then not giving up, because I could imagine it's not the easiest things to do.
It has been very rewarding. Some of the best friends I will ever have are in Ghana, and I have just been so impressed. Especially with some of the government workers, And again, that's not what I was told. Physician at the district hospital. He's the only physician in the entire district. And there's, I think, 14 or 16 clinics under him. And he's the obstetrician, he's the allergist, he's the pediatrician, he's the orthopod, he's everything. And,
wow.
He'll sit on the floor and sort medicines with us and talk about, we go to dinner and all he does is talk about his patients. And I've just been so amazed by the quality of people I've met. It's been very rewarding.
Oh, this is great. What a wonderful story and a great cause. Dr. Nancy, we're approaching the end of our time. Any final thoughts for our audience?
No, but I certainly do appreciate you having us and being able to talk about Yonkafah Project.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. It's such a delight to see what's going on outside of our own country walls and or borders, let me say. I just commend you again. And if there's anything that somebody out there in our audience wants to do, you can find more about Yonkafer on our site or on their site as well. And we'll put more information up on our site as soon as the show is over with. So again, thank you, Dr. Nancy, and this will conclude our show for today. There's always more to be found on our website, as I mentioned, singolaconsulting.com. As always, tweet us at Singola, C-O-N-S-L-T, if you'd like to continue the conversation. Thank you, and talk to you all next week.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today, and please visit us at SingolaConsulting.com to learn more about how we can help your organization realize their investments. Remember to always put the patient at the center of every decision you make.